poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Hey, everybody. Well, hope you're having a good day.
Yeah. I mean, I bet they are.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it's the middle of summer. Everybody's just having a good old-fashioned time. Jay, do you have a corny joke for us?
Well, I don't really know if it's like a joke. It's more of a concern. Like, I'm terrified of elevators.
Why are you terrified?
Well, it's not. Elevators. I mean, I've just been taking steps to avoid them.
Ah! Oh man. Well, I'm so proud of you. I hope that you are enjoying all of your sessions at Elevators Anonymous.
You know it, dude. One of my favorite things on my watch is that it tells me how many flights of stairs I walked up each day. It has like a stairs goal.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I think it's accurate because I've definitely gone up more than 4 flights of stairs today. But eventually it'll get it right and it'll be like, hey, congratulations, you did 10 flights of stairs today. Bravo.
Oh, I know. I always wonder because our office is a third floor walk up. So you go through what is 3 stories worth of stairs to get here.
Yeah.
And but it's also like a straight shot. Like, yeah. It's not like you're meandering your way up, like, you know, in like an apartment complex or anywhere else you've ever just gone upstairs before. You know, so it's like, are you giving me my full 3 stairs, or does this
should
just
be 2 stairs, right?
2 stairs?
Because you just take one set of stairs to get to the second floor and another set of stairs to get to the third floor.
Yeah, but they're long stairs.
I mean, they're long stairs. I think it's just measuring elevation gain, because sometimes I'll go on a run and it'll be like, whoa, you hit your stairs goal. And it'll be like, because you just changed elevation enough.
Right. Okay. Well, that's a fair question. So like now I feel like I'm going to like just sound like I'm highly unintelligent, but like, okay, so we're on the third floor,
right? Yeah,
but like, if you're on the second floor, you go up one flight of stairs to the second floor,
right?
So okay, so I think I see what you mean. So in order to get to the third floor, you go up 2 flights of stairs,
right?
Not three.
This is
like one there of those, like, it's like days math.
It's days math. Dude, days math and years math and month math. I'm so bad at it.
Oh, I know.
All the time.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's like, because you're always supposed to like count the first one. Like there's like a specific Harry Potter moment where I feel like we have like overly leaned into like one line in particular when it comes to when Tom Riddle or Voldemort was creating his various Horcruxes.
Which Horcruxes came in which order?
Yes, because it's like, I think that it says like in his 16th year of like...
It's in his 15th year.
In his 15th year, which means that he is like living in his 15th year, right?
Right. Maybe it is. Maybe it's in his 16th year, which means he's only 15 years old.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Yes. That was where I was originally leading with. Or also on this exact same note, like we are about to hit, or maybe even like this week, the 14th anniversary of Super Carlin Brothers, which is like another strange one because like on day one, we would have said, you know, year one. Like that's the playlist. Mm-hmm. Like our year one playlist started on day one.
Yeah.
Which means that like if we have like a year 15 playlist, it's like we will be inside of year 15.
Right.
Even though we've only completed 14 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean everybody listening is like, yeah, no, Ben.
We get it.
We get it.
That makes perfect sense to us and we have no problem. Oh my gosh. You know some year math that bums me out anytime it comes up?
What is that?
Okay. It is Zodiac and it is Chinese like New Year animal or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
These are so frustrating to me. Okay. Because for my whole life, you know, you would like, you know, I don't know anything about the animals assigned to the Chinese New Year or whatever.
Sure.
You know, the year of the dragon, the year of the boar, the year of the rabbit, whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. I would just go to, you know, Chinese restaurant and it would say, there'd be like years around the side and it'd be like, what year were you born in? 1988, your year of the dragon. And it was like one of those things where I was like, oh my gosh, yes.
Like you got a good one.
I got it. I got the dragon. I know. I was like, oh my God, I got dragon. That's so cool. That's like, not even like one of the good ones. It's probably the best.
I mean, it's hard to argue with it. Yeah.
It's dragon.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like we were at the Los Angeles Museum of Art.
Yeah.
LACMA. Yeah. Los Angeles County Museum of Art.
Yeah.
And while we were there outside, like in the courtyard area, they had these gigantic sculptures of all of the various like Chinese New Year animals.
Yeah.
And yeah, you go around and look at them. And I mean, there's no doubt about it. The dragon is super sick.
I know. Yeah. So like I've just like identified with dragon my whole life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I mean, that's what they called you in high school.
Exactly.
If I'm not mistaken.
Jonathan the Dragon Carlin.
That's right. Exactly. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah. like people are like, you know, they're like, oh, your name is Jonathan. You must go by Dragon.
Your Dragon.
Oh.
They're like, yeah, Dragon.
Yeah, Dragon. Let's go,
that's
Dragon.
What call,
okay,
that's what
yeah.
they call
me. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. So anyway. So tell me how this came crashing and burning on you. Are you somehow the year of the rat?
No, I'm not the year of the rat.
Okay.
So here's the problem is that the, like when you just look it up, if you're like the, it like, if you just need like a quick reference guide, you know, it will just say 1988 year of the dragon.
Right.
Because like 90% of 1988 is year of the dragon.
But the Chinese New Year,
but the Chinese New Year or whenever the date cutoff is like February 21st or something.
Sure.
And so I'm not actually year of the dragon.
What are you actually?
I am like year of the rabbit.
Oh!
You know? And I'm like, no, I'm dragon. Are you kidding me right now? No! I like I remember like looking this up and it being like, you know, I remember just going to the Google one day and being like, let me just type it in and just, you know, bask in how great it is to be year of the dragon.
Yeah, naturally. Or, I mean, yeah, like, you know how zit. You know how when you're doing nothing, you just fire up, what year am I?
Yeah. Well, because I think right now it's like, maybe it's year of the dragon right now.
I think last year was last year of the dragon.
Because there was like the big like Draco Malfoy thing.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, whatever. And like, I was like, oh, it's my year. And I look it up and it's like, the cutoff date's actually right here. So technically, actually, even though most people born in 1988 are year of the dragon, you are not. I was just like, I'm just going to tell people I'm dragon. I'm just going to tell people I'm dragon.
I think they already assume.
They already assume. Like, they'd be like, no, I'm sorry. You're not rabbit. You're dragon.
You're dragon.
Similarly, this is another one of those things where I think, like, when we were kids and we were presented with, like, what zodiac are you or whatever, you know? Like, they gave you the date ranges and they were much more specific about the weird. It's not like if you're January, you're this. If you're February, you're this. If you're March, you're this, you know?
Right.
You'd think you'd almost go by month, but it doesn't.
It doesn't.
For whatever reason.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Because I'm born on the 25th and I just get in on the Scorpio.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. So it turns out though that the, like, they've just sort of like got those numbers wrong. Or whatever.
Well, yeah, like I guess it's because like the like they chose them so long ago that like the night sky is like changed
something
since then
or something.
Right, yeah.
So my whole life I was just like Aquarius, you know.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, you know, actually, that's the dates are not, you know, we got the dates wrong. And like technically, like if you want to be like super correct about it, like these are the real dates. And I think like, you know, if you were like plump in the middle of whatever zodiac you'd been assigned to,
yeah,
you know, didn't really matter.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't that big a difference.
Right.
You know,
right, yeah.
It wasn't that big a difference. But yet again, Ben, I was not Aquarius. I think technically I am Capricorn.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Well, this changes everything.
Maybe, I know. Here I think I'm an Aquarius dragon my whole life, and it turns out I'm a Capricorn rabbit.
I was sort of thinking that.
You were thinking that?
I was like, when I look at Jay, he's giving Capricorn rabbit.
I'm a Capricorn rabbit.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. I'm like, not, okay. To be fair, it's only annoying because you feel like you thought something your whole life. And even though they're just sort of made up things, you know, it's like a fun little place to like, you know, categorize yourself with.
Yeah, I mean, they're like unimportant things that kind of give you like a team that you're a part of.
Exactly.
And you either do or do not relate with them.
Right.
Like Alice is like a Leo, and it's like one of those things where if like somebody were to ask me, I'd be like, oh yeah, she's a Leo. Like, I mean, like through and through.
Right.
Like,
but if Alice found out that she was on the wrong end of one of these like date shifts, and it's like, well, you were like, according to when you were a kid, when they had the dates wrong, you were a Leo, but actually you're more of like a Sagittarius or something.
Right. right.
You know?
Right,
yeah. I bet it would break her.
I don't think she would respond kindly.
I don't think she would like it.
I think at this point in time, she's just like a Leo. She's just like,
exactly.
It's not up for discussion. Like that is who I am and who I will be and whatever.
On the other hand, there's no doubt that when you've lived the life of the Aquarius, it is to be the most forgotten zodiac sign.
Is it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Aquarius is like, it's a weird one because it's like it's the water bearer.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not a water sign. It's an air sign.
The symbol is the water bearer, but it's not a water sign. It's an air sign.
So
for whatever reason, all
I can assume is that it means you're a cloud.
You're a cloud. Yeah, right.
You know, because like clouds are water bearers in there in the sky.
I'm like a big thunder cloud.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We could change your name from just dragon to thunder dragon.
Thunderstorm Carlin, you know?
I mean, I'm
right. It doesn't sound so bad.
It's got like a crack to it.
It does. You know? It does. It has a bit of a crack to it. Thunderstorm Carlin. That's my nickname in high school. So, you know.
Why? I love meteorology.
I'm the water bearer.
Yeah, right.
But apparently I'm not anymore, you know? Here I was, Thundercloud Dragon, and now, no.
No.
Capricorn, which is like what? Like I don't even know what the symbol for that is.
I think
a unicorn or something?
Oh, I mean, that wouldn't be bad.
Maybe I'm just mixing. I don't know.
In my head, and this is like, there's no relation. In my head, a Capricorn is like a cornucopia. You know, like it's like a basket that's overflowing with like bread, apples, and other delights.
Oh no, it's a ram.
Oh
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's that. No, wait. No, ram. Okay. Yeah. I was gonna say because like there's Taurus.
Hold on. That was wrong. It's not a ram. It's a sea goat.
It's
creature
a
with a goat's body and a fish's tail, Ben.
Cool.
I'm a mergoat.
You are a mergoat.
I'm a mergoat and a rabbit. Is this at least, you know what, though? This continues to make no sense. All right. We went from water bearing air sign to sea goat earth sign.
Wow.
Why is it earth sign?
It's
a fish.
Is it a fish?
I don't. It has it's a goat's body and a fish's tail. Okay. I guess it's a land animal. It just has a fish tail. I guess.
Odd.
I guess.
It's like a Vaporeon.
I'll give it that. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay. Except Vaporeons don't have like horns.
Well, I know, but I mean,
maybe like a male Vaporeon.
Yeah. Much more macho.
Much more macho. Ruling planet Saturn. There you go.
Oh.
That's probably my favorite planet other than Earth, probably.
It's a good one.
It's got the rings.
Yeah.
It has the most personality.
Well, it has a lot of pizzazz. There's no doubt about it. You put a bunch of planets in a line, and I can tell you which one people are going to be able to ID quick.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. That one.
Saturn is one of those things that I think they found the true name of the planet. Like, when you look at it, you're like, yeah, you are Saturn.
Of course it's
like,
Saturn.
You could be nothing else. Like, if we called you Jupiter, it would be weird.
People would be like, that's wrong.
Yeah.
No. I don't think so. No way. So anyway, there you go. That's my dumb. Oh, actually, though, speaking of great nicknames and stuff that I had in high school, like Saturn Rings Carlin, I keep getting Google alerts here recently.
You're getting Google alerts.
I'm getting Google alerts because I have them set up for like our different like shows and stuff. And I have it set up for, you know, just my name as well.
No, of course.
And for years and years and years, basically no results.
No.
You know, yeah. Just, you know, it's just one of those things you're like, oh, maybe if I get mentioned somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I got a little alert. But here recently, I keep getting Google alerts for Jonathan Carlin.
Hey.
And I'm like, hey. What'd I do? What did I do?
Tell me more.
Tell me more.
Why am I newsworthy today?
What did I do?
I know, of course, but you tell me what
you tell
think
me.
The right
yeah,
answer
where
is.
Have I cropped up on the internet today?
Yeah,
exactly. Well, Ben, let me tell you, there's another Jonathan Carlin out there making headlines.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
What is Jonathan Thunderbringer Carlin?
Yeah.
Doing out there in the
Ben,
real world?
You tell me. He keeps coming up. And I know he does sports.
Oh.
But I'm going to read you the article that was Google alerted to me today. And you tell me if you think you can tell what on earth sport other Jonathan Carlin plays.
Lay it on me. Here
All right,
we go.
Ready.
Yep, yep.
Carlin, a former Red Hugh star who recently transferred back down to Wicklow club Barnderrig, scored 1 point in the 5-point win at Croke Park. The Garden County will now meet it down in the final of the Tahitian Cup on July 11th in Croke Park. Wicklow lost out in the first round of the Tahitian Cup of the Taltian Cup, I'm sorry, to Laos by a score of 1-23 to 0-19. And they defeated Antrim by 2-19 to 3-15 in the quarterfinals. Carlin was in the Donegal panel last year as Jim McGuinness's side won the Ulster title and reached the All-Ireland final. The Red Hughes man was the hero of the four for Barndarrig in his last spell at the club, scoring a penalty in injury time as they won 1-8 to 2-4 over Annacura, picking up the Man of the Match award.
All I can think is cricket.
I have no idea.
I have absolutely no idea.
Why is the score a score inside of itself? Why is it 2-19 to 3-15?
I don't know. Who wins between 2-19 and 3-15?
I don't know. It says they defeated Antrim by 2-19 to 3-15. So it sounds like 2-19 wins. Maybe because
two times like, 19 is 38, whereas 3 times 15 is 45.
Right, so that doesn't make sense unless it's lowest score, or it's like they scored 19 runs or wickets or, you know, sprockadoodles in 2 innings versus 15 sprockadoodles in 3 innings. In 3 innings, like 19 and 2 versus 15 and 3.
A lot better. I am extremely lost.
I know. This keeps happening.
I mean, someone out there, though, is like, you guys are describing everyday common sense.
Someone out there understood everything I said.
Yes.
And I'm like, I just don't get it. I don't know what he does.
I know.
Well, but he's man of the match, man.
Right. It would be like us saying a touchdown is 7 points. It's like, well, it's 6 points. But you get one extra.
Right.
Or you can get 2 extra if you do something different.
Right.
So it's 7 points or 6 or 8.
And they're like, so wait, how do you get the one extra point? Like, will you kick a field goal? So field goals are 1. Well, no, field goals are 3. It's only 1 if it's after the touchdown.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Right. It's more complicated because you don't know what it means and it all sounds made up and is ridiculous.
Right. It's like, so, but like that field goal is always, like if it's after, it's the point after, it's always a set distance from back, and it's like, oh, is it pretty close? It's pretty close. And it's like, so it's like further back is more points. It's like, no, you can be closer than that and still get the 3 points.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, the distance doesn't matter.
Distance doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. No. So anyway, I suspect that's exactly what's going on.
I know, there. But like, I feel like I should know enough about sports in general to be able to read this and have some sense of what other Jonathan Carlin, or as the article called him, Johnny Carlin.
Oh,
I know. To which I was like, how dare you?
I mean, that's like your least favorite nickname.
I know.
Yeah.
Johnny Carlin out there.
I witnessed somebody do the
scoring wick bangers on people.
That's right. I saw somebody do the like, hi, I'm Jonathan. How's it going, John?
Just yesterday.
I was Eric. I literally was like looking at your face to be like, oh my gosh, I know this happens to you all the time, but in all the time fashion, it means that like it could have even happened like 6 times ever, which is like the 6 nickels situation. So it's like, it's not as common as it could be common, but when it happens, you're like, oh, there it was.
It's way more than 6 nickels, man. I'll tell you that for sure.
I'm sure. I mean, you live it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's surprising is I don't think, well, actually, I guess I just go by Ben. So I was going to say,
I just go by Ben. So you don't introduce yourself as Benjamin.
No. Unless it's on Through the Gryffindor.
Right.
It's like, because you do like, I'm Jonathan Carlin and I'm Benjamin
Carlin.
Right.
It has a good cadence to it.
It does. Yeah. They both have 8 letters.
They sure
know,
do.
Which is always, I don't know why, but like when I was a kid, I was like, this is cool. Like,
yeah.
Like eight letter gang.
8 letter gang.
Although probably what's going to happen is we're going to find out that we counted wrong and they're actually like 7 right. and 9.
Yeah, I know. They're going to be like, look, I know you thought you grew up with an 8-letter name. But the stars were in a different alignment then.
Right.
And actually, it's only 7 letters, it turns out. Yeah, numbers were wrong.
Is it not so bizarre the number of things that you can find to identify with? Like even our last name starting with the letter C. It's like, when it comes to like alphabetical things, I was like, well, obviously I want to be C because that means I'm at like the beginning of the alphabet, which always right. benefits. Like, you know, they get to your name first or whatever. But like, I wonder if if your name starts with last name starts with like M, you're like, no. You want to be in the middle of the alphabet.
Middle.
It's like there's nothing good about being like at the beginning or the end.
Right.
And then like people with Z last names are like, no. See, like we're rare.
We're rare.
It's like there's not a lot of us. So like,
I walk in the class, I go straight to the back right corner. I know where I'm sitting.
Exactly. Yeah, in the back right corner.
Every time.
They're never putting me up front.
They can do it by columns or rows, but I still end up in the same spot.
Exactly.
I haven't been able to see the blackboard in years.
Which is fine by me. Yeah.
Fine by me, you know? Z's don't need it.
That's it. Yeah. Wouldn't that be like one of those funny, like there's like Malcolm Gladwell's like Outliers or whatever that goes through and talks about how like most professional, not most, but like an inordinate amount of hockey players are born in January because of how like the junior leagues cutoff dates work in
Canada.
Yeah. So it's like if you're born in January, then you're like almost a year older than people who are born in December, which means you're bigger, taller, stronger, faster, which means you get elevated faster, which means you get better coaching and so on and so forth.
But right.
Like, wouldn't it be absolutely hilarious to also discover that like in the mobile game Bejeweled Blitz, people whose last names start with X, Y, or Z are like much better because they're always the back of class.
Back class. Like no one's ever checking on them. You know?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. It's like, what's the most obscure thing ever where it's like, why are so many people who are good at this last name start with Z?
Right, like people with the last names who start with A are just generally better at school because they're always right in front.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's like you're always getting... I mean, and we're also assuming that seating charts work this way. And again, it's probably like not always, but at least sometimes.
I would say you're right. I mean, there's not the odd teacher who's not like, I like to do it backwards because those kids never get to sit up front.
Right.
Those teachers exist. You're out there. Some people just draw them from a hat. And, you know, after the first 9 weeks, a lot of people just switch it up based on, you know, behaviors and relationships and stuff.
I always wonder if you're the teacher, and we maybe have discussed this before, but it's sort of like if you're like seeing certain like friendships or are teachers ever playing like stupid little matchmakers for like, you know, it's like, ooh.
It's like
I should put these people together because like, you know, sometimes you get parked next to your person and it's either like a win or it's not.
Yeah.
And I mean, that could just be part of random. It's like sometimes when you flip a coin, it's heads. And sometimes it's tails. So maybe it's as simple as that. Maybe the teacher's not that dialed in. But I like to think that like part of them is sort of like, no, you can't put Ben next to Ryan because they'll just like chitter chatter the whole time. However, this one could be a good pairing for Ben.
Right.
Or even just like attempting to like optimize. Like if you've got like a student who's like good at helping the people around them, it's like put them next to like a student who like maybe needs like a little extra like explanation or something.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh yeah, no, like now like
I feel like my Latin teacher would do that one.
Oh really?
Yeah,
like put you next to someone you could help or
yes.
be helped by.
No, that I could help.
Oh,
I was always in this position.
So you were like not to like all hang ten at it or anything, but you were pretty darn good at Latin.
I mean, I guess so. Better than the people I was sitting next to, who apparently needed help.
I mean, I don't know. I never took Latin. It was like the fact that it was considered like a language course you could take. I was always like, it seems like an SAT prep course.
I mean,
that I wish I had taken.
It was like if you weren't getting an A in Latin, you like I don't know. It was like so easy.
Really?
I mean, not because of the language. It was because of the teachers. And they would just like, the teacher I had for like the first 2 years in Latin, and then we eventually got like a second teacher, but she would make quizzes or tests or whatever where you could just easily score 150 points, you know?
Oh my gosh.
Easily. And it wouldn't be necessarily about like the language itself. There would be just things about like, you know, like Roman history and stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And, you know, the stories from Roman history are a lot more fun than like regular history because a lot of times they're just sort of these like legendary tales and stuff.
Yes.
And or like these funny little things, which made them very, very easy to remember.
Right.
And so it would just you just go through and it would just be like it was so easy to just like ace it all. And then you'd get 150 and it'd be like, well, I can get so many things wrong, you know,
right,
without needing to worry about it. So I don't know. It wasn't particularly difficult. I didn't think in that regard.
Okay.
Because the teachers made the tests really flexible.
Man, see, and that's so funny too, because I was taking like Spanish, and like my Spanish 3 and 4 instructors were both like notoriously difficult, like graders and examiners. And so it's like going into those classes was just like, well, this is going to be a treat, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like this is just hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Oh, I know. Yeah. So it's like sometimes you go through school and you hear stuff like that and you're like, I should have just taken Latin, because then my GPA would have been that much better.
Exactly. It was like a free A, you know?
Yeah, right.
Hooray.
Hooray. Oh, that's actually funny because of your Latin teacher.
Oh, I guess. Yes. That. Yeah. My second Latin teacher married someone whose last name was Hooray.
Yes. Yes, so, indeed. Yeah.
Yep.
How about that? That worked out well. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. When I first tried to explain what I do for a living to my father-in-law, I'm pretty sure he didn't think it was a real job. But you know what's overrated? Real jobs. Sorry, Mark, if you're listening. But if you're tired of passive-aggressive emails from Steve down in accounting, it might be time to take that daydream life of yours and turn it into a reality with Shopify. And for me, the daydream part was no problem. If anything, I had too many. Jay and I had this carport in the house that we shared when we were starting SEB that was just full of experiments? But it was executing an idea that felt like the tricky part. And by executing, I mean, how do people buy my, let's call them, inventions? But Shopify had the solution. It's easy to set up, even easier to close a sale. Shopify does all of the heavy lifting, so once you've convinced the person that they need a chandelier made of bottle caps, you don't lose them due to a complicated checkout procedure. I also love that Shopify can store information so that repeat customers can complete their purchase with ease. With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business. So go make it one, even if it doesn't seem like a real job. Start your free trial at shopify.com/poppop. Again, you can start your free trial at shopify.com/poppop. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by BetterHelp. Quick real talk, you guys. Jay and I are big advocates for mental health support. We both see counselors ourselves and try to create an open dialogue about the experience. At SEB, we even have a no questions asked policy for our staff to take therapy appointments at any time. And recently, BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. And I get it. I remember the first time I ever spoke publicly about going to a session. It felt like the ultimate act of vulnerability. I choked up. I had tears in my eyes. I was afraid of what the world might think. But if there's one thing I found about speaking with members of this community, it's that a nudge can and does help in their lives. And I firmly believe that for every person who can take the first step opens the door for others in their lives to do the same. And with BetterHelp, all you have to do is take a quick survey about your needs and they'll match with a therapist that fits your goals. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Okay, so speaking of school, I have like an interesting topic that I feel like I was not for any specific reason, just as like the disclaimer up front.
Okay.
But the idea is sort of like about boredom.
Boredom.
Like, and why does boredom exist? Mm-hmm. And is it not something that, like, from an evolutionary standpoint, we maybe need, but like more modern times have like created greater opportunity for boredom? And I know that boredom dates back like a long time, so it's not like, you know, it's not like it's new to us because we have like smartphones, and if we put our smartphone down, we get bored really quick because we're used to being like inundated with information.
I think people are less bored than ever because of phones and stuff.
Well, I think it can entertain you during what would otherwise be downtime.
Right.
Yeah. Like it gives you like a thing to
right.
help
it's
with.
Not, yeah. I think it like makes you avoid boredom.
Right. But like, so here's kind of like the thought. And I was coming at it from like a variety of different perspectives. But like, you know, before the washing machine, you know, for your clothes, like you might have the task of going and like washing your clothes by hand.
Right.
And so at the end of the task, you felt like you accomplished something because you were directly involved.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that sense of like, I like, I did this, I can take pride in this, and now I'm done with this. And like, so I wonder if like even like something like folding or putting away clothes is like easier to stomach because you were like more involved throughout the entire process. Whereas like now you put your clothes in like the washing machine or whatever, and it's just sort of like you did nothing and you just have like another job at some point when it's done doing its job. And like the folding of the clothes probably is just an overall like boring task, as probably maybe like running clothes over like a scrub board might be as well.
Right.
But like compare that, for example, to like if you went and like pressure washed the sidewalk or whatever, mm-hmm. like it might be like a lot more fun because there's like an obvious finished product. You were like directly involved start to finish with going through, and you get to stand back and like admire your work mm-hmm. at the end of the day.
Right.
Or like you could take into example, like relaxation as a concept defies boredom.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like boredom can be the act of doing nothing. Relaxation is enjoying the act of doing nothing.
Right.
You know, but so like if you were to go and split wood all day, then if you get to the end of the day, you're like muscles are sore. You are tired. You've like physically exerted yourself. So doing nothing is relaxing. Like sitting on your porch and like staring at the sunset is just sort of like, whew.
Do you think you couldn't sit on your porch and enjoy the sunset if you didn't work all day?
No, I think you certainly can. I mean, case in point, yeah. like, you know, I've been on vacation where it's like the sun is setting and it's a beautiful sight to behold. And you're sort of like, wow, this is gorgeous.
Right.
But I do think that there's like if you're, it's like a summer day and you're a child or whatever, and you like you're in like an opportunity, like if you woke up and went to like a morning run like we did, we had cross country, so we'd like get up and go do it. Like if I had like a few minutes after that to like lay on the couch and just like lay there, mm-hmm. it's like that was relaxing.
Yeah.
But if it was like the middle of like a day and I hadn't done anything, I was just laying on the couch, I'd be like, Mom, I'm so bored.
Right.
You see what I mean?
I do. Yeah.
Like there's like a difference between right. those experiences.
Absolutely.
So it's sort of like what is like the functional like purpose, I guess, or is there one behind boredom?
Oh, I think there is absolutely a functional purpose to boredom.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think it is honestly extremely important that people feel bored.
Okay.
That like I think the purpose is because it lets your mind wander freely, and like I think it's when your imagination is the most active and like when you are the most inventive. Like I have literally like told Luke before, when he's like, I'm bored, I was like, here's what you're going to do. Literally go upstairs and lay on your bed and stare at the ceiling for 10 minutes. Like, just go. And like, I promise you won't be bored anymore. And he went up and tried it. And he like, literally, like, you know, 6 minutes in, he thought of something to do in his room and was just playing for like an hour.
Okay.
Like, you know, like I couldn't believe he like actually tried it out.
I was gonna say, yeah,
and did it. I was like, no, I promise, this is gonna work. And so I think, you know, it. No one likes being bored. I think like we avoid it like the plague. And like this is, I think, one of the problems with phones. It's like you, instead of sitting down and experiencing boredom, which would like trigger your mind to find you something to do or give you something to do. Like you're not just going to sit there forever and just be like, I got nothing, you know, like you will find something.
Right. Right. You know? Right. Yes.
But like the act of then pulling out your phone, it's like, it flips the switch from your brain being bored to being like entertained at like, you know, 1%.
Sure.
And as a result, you are getting zero productivity out of your boredom and basically zero productivity out of being on your phone.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yes. Well, so, and so here's kind of like an interesting thought. Cause this was a sentiment while I was like researching this that I stumbled on. And that is, like if you were incapable of being bored, would you be more or less productive?
If you were incapable of being bored, I think Good question. I bet you'd be less productive.
Yes.
Honestly.
Because you are capable of doing nothing all the time.
Because, right.
So if you're incapable of being bored, it's not that like think about it like this. Somebody who you might say is incapable of being bored might just be somebody who is very good at constantly moving on to the next activity. Like, it's sort of like, well, I finished this, time to go do that. Time to finish this, time to go do that. You know, and like, maybe they're really good at finding that perfect, like, Goldilocks zone where it's like every task they go and do is the equal amount of like challenging but rewarding, because I feel like that is the most ideal tasks for us are challenging and rewarding. Mm-hmm. Like it means that they test you a little bit, but they're not so difficult as to discourage you. So there's like an attainability to executing the experience.
Yeah.
But like if you are incapable of boredom altogether, then it's almost like having like received like the Death Eater's kiss. Like, the Dementor's kiss. Goodness gracious. You'd think we talk about this for a living.
Yeah.
But like, it's almost like you have no real will to do anything, but you're also not fussed by not doing anything.
Right.
You're just completely complacent.
Right.
So like, incapability to boredom is highly unproductive, which it feels like if you wanted to like inverse that logic, is that getting bored easily probably means that you are highly productive, or that you have like a ongoing curiosity or imagination.
I mean, even just like if you are capable of being bored, then you are likely to try and avoid being bored, you know, which then could be productive.
I also think that, yes, right. Yes. But also to your point, I think it's sort of like when you're bored is like when your imagination starts to like, yeah, like go on the hunt for what would be one of those tasks that would like fit the mold rather nicely.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I think is kind of interesting about this is that we just went up and we were, you know, in upstate New York and Massachusetts for our grandmother's funeral. And while we were up there, we got to visit like her side of the family, you know, and go to like their family farm and like all of like the really cool things that they do. They've got, you know, like tractors and ATVs and all terrain, you know, like gators and side-by-sides and you know, all that type of stuff. But it's like, they're not all just like toys for play. You know, they are like functional pieces of equipment that help them accomplish all of the necessary tasks of managing over 100 acres of, you know, field, meadow, forest, it drives, you know,
right.
That there's plenty to do all the time. And so like, you know, we roll up and, you know, the barn is like hand built and hand cut by our, you know, second cousin. The house overlooks this like unbelievable, like picturesque landscape. And there's a giant boulder in the middle of a field next to the rippling, you know, tall grass,
the tall and hay out there growing. Yeah.
Yes. Like it's all just like gorgeous and beautiful and everything. So like you get there and you're just like in utter awe, you know, you're like, this is like, who wouldn't want to live like this?
Right.
You know? And so then we were sitting down with all of them, you know, and there's multiple members of our family who kind of like live in various sections of this big plot of land. And in speaking to them, they're like, It's awesome, but they're like, it is a lot of work. Like, it's a massive lifestyle adjustment. Like, you constantly are tending to it.
Right.
Like, in order to keep this, it's like we're working all the time.
Right.
And so,
yeah,
like,
it's like you got to be out there. You know, they showed us like the way they're mowing the grass. And it's not the little go-kart, things you see out on the side of the road. It's not like a push mower or a tractor. It's like, I mean, it is a tractor, but it's a tractor dragging a 7-foot wide
bush hog.
Yeah, bush hog that's mowing the grass behind you so you can do giant swaths of land at a time.
Exactly. Exactly. But like, to me, looking at that, I was like, this would feel like stacked on stacked on stacked opportunities to do what felt like the perfect kind of work. Like, it's work that you need to do. It's not going to be like you have to be focused. You have to be like involved with it. It needs to be done. And so you get like a huge sense of satisfaction. And it's like, it's not too challenging, but it's challenging enough. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I could totally see where, like, if I was in an environment like this, I might not get bored.
Right.
You know, because yeah. It would always just be like, well, I'll just go do the next thing.
Do you find yourself bored frequently now?
It depends. I have never felt like I have been as good at carving myself out of boredom. And sometimes I think it could like overcome me. I do think that like, as I've gotten older and like have like, you know, a house of my own and things that like are priorities to me, like maintaining the garden or the yard or doing like around the house projects or whatever, those are the kinds of weekends that are almost like the best for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like sometimes like if I just have like a blank slate day, I don't know what to do with it.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like, how will I occupy my time?
Right.
Go
stare at the ceiling, Ben.
I know, go stare at the ceiling and just like wait for like inspiration to strike. And it's like, okay,
yeah,
go do it. But also it's like a learned behavior as well, is that like going and like tinkering with something. So like recently, like I took the front tow hooks off of my truck and I painted them red. And it's like, functionally makes no difference whatsoever. Really not that big of a deal. But it was a project that cost me no more than $7 because all I had to do was buy a red, you know, can of spray paint.
Right.
And I used like a little box to like hang them in or whatever. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like I already had all the tools to like remove them and put them back. And it's very easy. Like there's nothing involved.
Mm-hmm.
But like that was like the kind of task where it's like, this is like silliness, but like I am loving this right
yeah.
now. Yeah. This is very enjoyable. How are you with boredom? Because you're someone who I would have said like our entire life, like I would almost be like, Jay's just not bored. Like,
right.
You always go from one thing to the next. And it's almost like you have such like a passion, I think, to go and do the things that you like to do, that it's like you just go and enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, I think you're right. Like I'm usually not too bored most of the time. I definitely feel like I'm on my phone too much, for sure. Like, I feel like I really am really trying to focus on, like, putting it down and stuff.
Sure.
But I'm also, like, you know, even, like, in the shower, I'll, like, play an audiobook or something.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, yeah. I don't really need to do that. But also, I'm like, but I enjoy listening to the book. And it's like, but I could just stand here and be bored. And that would probably be productive, too, in other ways that I'm unwilling to test, you know.
Well, and I feel like this is like why the concept of like shower thoughts
yeah
exists
is a thing
in the first place,
right.
Because you're in there and it's like I can't do anything else,
right?
You know, and like probably for so many of us, especially like in the modern world, if you're not listening to something like on your phone or through a speaker or whatever, it's like, yeah, you know, I don't know, you go in, or like singing in the shower even,
right.
It's like I bet that is a thing for the same reason,
right?
It's like you're in here
you're trapped in this little box for like, you know, 10-15 minutes,
right?
And it is like it's like you are so alone in there and your mind is so free to wander because you're right, you can't be doing anything else,
and for
that's why you have those crazy thoughts. And it's like you could have those thoughts all the time,
right
yeah.
Yes, but like then the other thing too is that like the act of showering is like cruise control probably for most people.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know how much you really need to I mean, maybe some people do, but like you know, the act of like washing my hair, for example, like I'm not thinking about that. Like I can easily do it without giving it a single thought.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's probably where you're sort of like, yeah, letting your mind wander a little bit there. And there's even like a episode of Big Bang Theory about this, where like Sheldon is trying to solve like some piece of like complex physics and he can't do it. He's been like staring at the board for like days and days and days. So he goes and works at like Penny's restaurant, like as like a busboy. I think without being hired, maybe like he may have just like gone and thrown on an apron and just started like doing stuff.
Right.
And then like he has a brain blast.
Right. Because he's doing some menial task.
He's doing a menial task.
Right.
Yeah,
and of course,
yeah.
Penny's all offended because it's like her whole job.
It's her job. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, wow. I mean, there's obviously like meant to be some layers of humor inside of that.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're an astrophysicist, what is boring for you?
Right.
But yeah, no, it's definitely, it's interesting, you know, like, but then if you even think about like old times, like ancient times or whatever, it's like they had artwork, they had paintings, and like if you were living in the time of like hunter-gatherers, for example, like this may seem like a luxurious use of time, where it's like, when would you ever even like practice drawing horses on cave walls, you know, like to the point where like you could do that at all.
Right.
You know, and it's like, it simply must be the case that not 100% of their time was fully dedicated, like, only to survival.
Right.
Like, they had been able to achieve enough, you know, civilization, even in, like, cave times, to where they were using recreational time for an artistic endeavor. Because even then, you probably don't have the same scope of thought of, like, how interesting will this be for people? Like, just the idea of, like, leaving your mark, effectively.
Right, yeah. Did cave people have, like, legacy as a thought?
Right, yeah. Like, were they thinking, like, oh, imagine hundreds of years from now, these might still be here. Did they even have the concept of years?
Right.
You know, like...
Yeah, I have no idea. Probably not.
Right, because if you don't have history books, it's a lot harder. Like, you know, this is, like, where information could be, like, passed from, you know, like, generation to generation through teaching and instruction, and, you know, this is how you build or make an arrowhead, or, you know, bend a bow and arrow or something like that. You know, like, there are certainly things that you could teach, and I could see where then, like, instruction between elders and you know, the up and coming people is so, you know, vital. But yeah, if you don't have history books, how do you value history?
Right.
Like,
yeah. I mean, I think this is probably just so widespread, it's not being 100% accurate or anything, but I think if you do, like, the Spaceship Earth at Epcot, they talk about, like, oh, recorded, like, the cave paintings are, like, recorded history, you know? Like, the problem is that you couldn't move the cave if you moved, you know?
Oh, yeah, you know?
So they didn't have books. So it's, like, it is, like, a kind of history. Like, I mean, I can imagine... For sure, like, if you're drawing horses, like, going out and staring at the sky and being like, the moon looks different, and just, like, recording what the moon looked like every day, and, like, suddenly, I bet you'd notice pretty quick that, like, every 30 days, it comes back.
Yeah, you end up getting, like,
yeah, you're getting, like, the same pattern or something, which then it's like, oh, okay, I understand something now.
Yes.
Something's happening. I don't know what I understand, but there is a pattern, you know?
Right. I mean, and maybe that's the thing, too, is that, like, you get, like, these, like, ancient Greek philosophers, and a lot of times it's the same thing where I'm, like, fundamentally blown away by the wisdom that they were able to surmise about, like, the human experience from those times without books on psychology, or even just, like, the widespread, like, you know, we have the internet these days. So, like, certain shared experiences can be discovered by someone who notices it and makes a reel or a TikTok, like, hey, we've all done or said these things before, right? Like, that's relatable as heck. You know, it's like these ancient Greek philosophers, I mean, and maybe they were just out speaking to people all day, every day, and sussing out what certain commonalities are.
Right.
But by the nature of being a philosopher, you're not living the same everyday life as, say, a farmer might be. It's like your job is to think, it's to educate, it's to document or write down. And then even then you can start to see, like, why, like, books were of, like, such immense value as, like, time unfolded, because maybe it used to be the case that the only way you could garner fresh information is from somebody who has direct experience with that thing.
Right.
You know, it's like you're probably not going to just, like, come up with how to make an arrowhead properly, but someone somewhere along the way did, and it's been perfected throughout, you know, this tribe's tradition, and now we can teach you how to do it.
Right.
But, like, without that, it would be very difficult to do.
Right.
But then imagine being given a book.
Here's all the answers.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Like, it must have felt like cheating for a while. Like, the relationship that people had with books is like, you mean to tell me that I can take, like, lifetimes of experience from people and they've put it into this thing that I'm holding.
Right.
And I can then do everything that is inside of it.
Right.
Like, the brilliance of, like, books and libraries, it's like, I think that we have... I don't think that people necessarily have, like, negative relationships with libraries, but I don't know if we're as thrilled with libraries as we could or even should be.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, libraries are amazing.
Right. Like, they're just jam-packed.
They're free.
With knowledge. Yeah. And it's the kind of thing that probably, like, dating back a long time ago, people would literally kill for knowledge.
Sure.
You know, it's like, what an amazing thing.
All right. I have... it's so interesting that we're talking about this, because I have an experiment that I'm curious if you have come across before.
Okay, later.
All right, it is called Universe 25.
I have, just based on the name, I don't know what that is.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you up front, it is right up your alley.
I can't wait. I'm like,
big time.
The literal edge of my seat.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
Universe 25.
Go ahead.
All right. This was an experiment conducted by psychologist John B. Calhoun between 1968 and 1972.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
And it's called Universe 25 because there were 24 previous universes until he got to this one where he thought he had created what he was looking for. Right?
Created
what he's looking for.
Okay.
And what he's trying to do is answer a simple question, which is, what happens if a population has unlimited resources but limited space? I guess. And so what he's using is mice in his experiments. Okay.
Yep.
And so he creates this giant enclosed habitat for mice that provides unlimited food, unlimited water, comfortable temperatures, no predators, no disease, plenty of nesting areas. He literally had like apartments for mice built into the walls,
wow,
stuff like that. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So, and this is this the setup he arrived at for Universe 25 was after, you know, 24 universes worth of testing to figure out what was like the best, the most, the most ideal setup for mice to live in.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
He's trying to create mouse utopia.
So effectively, yeah, it's like you start with, like, let's just say you started with like your classic go to the pet store, buy a plastic box, put bedding in the bottom of it with like a little drip water feeder.
Right.
It's sort of like, there, you've got everything you need. You have water. I can fill up your food bowl, you know, in the morning.
Right.
And like, I'll clean out the bedding
right
in there, you know, and it's sort of like, that's good. Except like, you know, it gets dirty and the dirt causes disease. Disease spreads inevitably. And then they die or something like
right
that.
Right.
Like, yeah. And it's like, okay, we need something cleaner. Let's try again. That's,
right.
So that's how you get from like universe one is probably very basic and comparison to everything you've learned from universes 1 through 24.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So basically he sets up Mouse Utopia, big 9 foot by 9 foot living area. And he puts in 4 male mice and 4 female mice and begins observing.
Okay.
And the experiment takes a solid 4 years. So at first, population explodes, doubles roughly every 55 days, and then slows around day 315 when there are now 620 mice.
Wow.
Living in Universe 25. And eventually, the population would peak around 2,200 mice, despite the habitat being capable of housing nearly 4,000.
Okay.
Okay, so we get to 2,200. That's our highest one. But at that point, things began to unravel.
Oh.
For the mice, despite living in their perfect world with all the housing and space they can need, with all the food and water they could want,
sure,
things aren't going good. And he coins the term behavioral sink, and social structures break down. And what he starts noticing is increased aggression. So the dominant males would fight consistently, like all the time, even when there was no need to. And on the other hand, the weaker males would just become completely isolated. And then there was parental failure, like mothers would just abandon or neglect their offspring altogether. They would maybe lose track of which like offspring were theirs, and infant mortality skyrockets. Then became the social withdrawal, where some mice stop participating in normal social behaviors entirely. And then he has one group eventually, which he started calling the beautiful ones.
Oh.
I know, the
and
beautiful
like,
ones.
Like, and are these like mice that have started to, like, because let's say you have your dominant, you know, males or whatever, and so now you have like survival of the fittest going on. Like, the idea would be that like the most powerful lion in the savannah is probably the one with the, I don't know, the best genetics because it became the most powerful lion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's how that works, but somehow, some way, it feels like that's survival of the fittest, right?
You right, know? Sure, yeah.
So like, what is it? What are the beautiful ones? Like that's well, like my knee-jerk reaction.
That's your knee-jerk reaction, but it goes a step further because
okay,
that lion would still feel the need to like procreate. Like he still has some sense of like purpose in the world, at least in terms of like reproducing.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
The beautiful ones do not feel this purpose anymore. They have no purpose at all. So they avoid fighting. They avoid mating. They groom themselves obsessively. And all they do is eat, sleep, and exist.
Wow.
And groom. Okay. And eventually, like, so many mice, because they had no purpose, nothing they were supposed to be doing, nothing to drive them, like, the births ceased altogether. And even though many mice were physically capable of reproducing, they no longer possessed the social behaviors necessary to do so, and the colony goes completely extinct.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
4 years later.
4 years later. Now, okay.
So it caused, you know, the internet loves to talk about Universe 25 and say what it proved or whatever. And it's hard to say, obviously. And like, it's not saying that this is proof that comfortable society inevitably collapses or whatever.
Sure.
You know, yeah. Because one, it has not been like recreated since, like, sure. under similar circumstances. And if you're trying to apply it from like mice to people would argue that like, well, people are way more, you know, intelligent and complex than mice.
Sure.
And they'll like, you know, figure out these problems instead right. of just like dying.
right.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Like what would it look like for humans to reach max capacity? Like what would have to be all problems solved completely and utterly?
Right. Exactly. And then like, you know, there's also, you could argue like, well, that he gave them most of everything for a utopia, but you know, it wasn't really utopia. Like, they had food and water, but they still couldn't leave the enclosure they were in, even though it was a large enclosure.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So there's some of that too. Cause like, that's the thing. It's like, you can say it's utopia. Like, I feel like it's such a weird, utopia is always such a weird word, because it's like, you can say you built this utopia, but like, everyone died. So it's like, I don't think you accomplished it, because if it was utopia, then they wouldn't have died, you know?
Well, and this is where, yeah, like it's fascinating yeah. to attempt to understand like what the concept of utopia is,
right?
Or like this is where, you know, if you wanted to look at it from like a, you know, like, I don't know, astronomical perspective, like it's almost like, is, let's hit the galaxy is huge, right? There must be other life out there,
right?
Somewhere. Let's say there's one planet that somehow, you know, has such a mega intelligent, you know, species that they can observe the life cycles of other planets.
Mm-hmm.
And they know, without us ever knowing, that they know that like they can like witness things unfold. Like, the thing I always come back to is whether or not there aren't certain inevitabilities. Like, we will create and explore and expand and share information, and the sharing of information will lead to breakthrough intelligence that then, like,
right, you'll always go through the Stone Age and the Industrial Revolution and
yes,
you know, the Age of Information and whatever lies beyond.
Yeah. And so at some point in time, the Age of Information will effectively cause like an exponential launch in terms of like what any given species is capable of, and that launch will happen so much faster than evolution ever accounted for. And it's almost like that is the pacing issue that any society no society will ever recognize like the potential for. Like, you know, the iPhone 1 came out, and then within 2 years there was like the iPhone 2, and then within another year there was the 3, and then every year since then there's been the 4, the 4S, the 5, the 5S, so on and so forth. Like, you know, we want to expand, we want to get better, we want to do this, and it's like, if we have the ability to, then we should, is effectively what it comes down to. And I don't necessarily like think that there's a way to know if you could disagree with that sentiment. Like, maybe it's good, maybe it isn't. Maybe we solve health crises maybe just you using your phone doesn't help you realize, but maybe is happening out there in the world. You know, like
right.
there are benefits that you probably don't know that are the end result of these things, even if we can be cynical about scrolling or Instagram or social media or comparison,
right.
all those types of things. But so then it's almost like, if you're to discuss this idea of utopia, it's almost like, is utopia when a society completes its mission? Like, and so, because like, if you were to think about a real utopia, it's probably a world where every single person all day, every day has the ability to go and find a task that fits perfectly into the Goldilocks zone. So it's like, all day, every day, maximum fulfillment would be achieved by going and doing a task that is exactly correct for you.
Right.
And in that way, you can make the argument that like, what utopia actually looks like isn't just like we've automated every single thing. There's no need to do anything. And now we just sort of like exist until nothing.
Right.
You know, which I feel like maybe is happening with the mice on some level. It's like the mice have reached a stage where there's not really anything left to do.
Right.
You know, and therefore it's kind of like, you know, you always want to make the world a better place for the people who are going to come after you. If nothing else, that could be a mission that may exist in our hearts in some way. Like when we raise our children, why do we want them to like learn the lessons we hadn't learned? Why do we want them to be prepared to go off into the world and do a good job? Like you probably don't think that your underlying objective is for them to go and make the world a better place. You want them to go and live a good life. But what is living a good life?
Right.
You know, it's like probably on some level contributing to society. You know?
Right.
Like, and again, you might not think of it that way.
It's so hard to know too, because it's like you can say like going out and do it. Like if you have all your needs met, is there no way to find purpose?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, like on some level, we go back to like the caveman example. It's sort of like maybe if we like reached a stage where like, you know, all of our, you know, daily whatevers are taken care of, like maybe like way, way, way more people would look to like arts and music and expression and stuff like that.
Right.
But even the other hitch, if you wanted to take it like one step too far, purely for the sake of the conversational argument, it's like in utopia, can there be like heartbreak, you know, like, and surely there can be like loss is not some like, well, I guess that's part of the question. Does utopia account for like all medicine is solved?
Right. Like, like disease doesn't exist.
Disease does not exist.
Right.
You know, so it's like every single person, again, in utopia lives a full and healthy life. That's the belief.
Right.
You know, then it's like, then everybody who then ultimately passes on, something we can't necessarily escape as humans, and assuming that that's not part of the utopia, is like, you know, administering your brain into a computer so you can live on forever.
Right.
You know, like, then you could at least even have solace with the fact that every single person who passes lived a completely
right.
full life.
Perhaps in a true utopia, no one is ever really that sad when people die, because everyone understands so intrinsically that it was such a fulfilling life and that death is so inevitably part of life that everyone just accepts it. You know,
you were robbed of nothing.
Right.
You know, like, and I think, right. you know, extremely broad strokes here, but it's like when somebody like very young passes away, like a huge amount of the heartbreak is like all of the experience they didn't get to have.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but so all, you know, I'm putting a lot of caveats in here just to ask a very loaded question, but it's sort of like, if all of that is the case, then maybe also things like being paired with like whatever version of like your soulmate is also the case, which means that like everybody has the most fulfilling relationships they can have. And like one of the things I oftentimes think about like music is it expresses things that we have a hard time expressing otherwise. Art, like, you know, paintings are an expression of what is inside that like artists, I believe, take from within. Like, I don't think to an artist, the goal is to draw a pretty picture. That may be the end result, but what they're really doing is taking like a sensation, an experience, something that means something to them and like making it solid.
Right.
You know, and maybe people understand that and maybe they don't ultimately understand that. But like, if there is no such thing as heartbreak, what are the songs about?
Right.
You know, like,
yeah, I know what you mean.
Because like a lot of songs are about heartbreak.
Yeah, I know. It's like you can't at some level. I think this reminds me, honestly, weirdly, of the Cathay in Name of the Wind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the idea of the Cathay, he's just this like creature that lives in this tree and is apparently all seeing. He can see every timeline, every future, every possibility.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And so it's very dangerous to talk to him, or he might be very interesting to talk to, except for his innate maliciousness, which is to try to cause the most amount of harm as possible with every conversation he has.
Right.
Right. So because he can see all possibilities, he knows exactly what words to say to you to cause like the worst going forward.
The most amount of destruction. Damn. So yeah. It's like whatever the Cathay says is perfectly worded as to put you on the absolute worst path.
Right.
And it knows exactly what those words right. are because it can see all futures.
Right. And it's like, oh, you didn't know. No, you just don't believe the Cathay. But it's like, no, that doesn't matter because he'll know that you weren't going to believe him and that will be accounted for.
Yeah. It's like you can't do the Friends thing where it's like, they don't know we know they know we know.
Exactly. You like, can't know that. Like, he knows.
He knows all of the they know we know we know. The,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. He knows how many times you're going to go back and forth, you know. How many times you're going to switch the poison or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, 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 right. Yeah. Oh, that's such a good example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way the Name of the Wind works is our main character, Quoth, is telling the story to two people in a bar, Bast and Chronicler.
Yep.
And Bast knows of the Cathay and Chronicler doesn't. So afterwards, he's just like, oh my gosh, wait, Quoth, you spoke to the Cathay? And he's like, this is like, you are too powerful of a person. Like, this is the worst news in the entire world.
Right.
Like, it, like, maybe if, like, just a random peasant spoke to him, that wouldn't be so bad. But, like, you are an unbelievable person
right.
capable of so much. Like, this is, it's like, there's no point. There's no point anymore. There's no point to doing anything because you have spoken to the Cathay. And, you know, he thinks it is the literal worst news in the entire world and there's nothing to be done about it.
Right. He basically, the way they describe it is like you could shoot it shoots an arrow into the future,
right.
which is inherently destructive. This is like the main character would be like shooting like an atom bomb
right.
into the future.
Right.
Yeah, it's like this is dangerous.
Right. Yeah. Right. But so he's having this whole like withdrawn like pity party for himself. And Chronicler comes and talks to him and just basically slaps him in the face. And he's just like, listen, none of that makes sense. You're being stupid. Because here's the thing. Like, he can make things bad. He could go for the worst possible outcome. But that doesn't mean literally every single thing is bad.
Right.
Right? Like, you were still downstairs making him laugh earlier. And that laugh was great. And he sang a song earlier. And everyone enjoyed it. Like, that was fun. And when you drink the wine tastes good in your mouth. So even if some things are bad, it can't be every single thing is bad.
Right.
Right? So, that's kind of the ultimately reversal from where we came from here.
Sure.
Which is to say that, yes, you can have, like, maybe you could have a place where that, like, all your needs are taken care of and you have no worries or whatever. But it doesn't mean that, like, food won't taste bad in your mouth.
Correct. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. And especially because, like, every single, you know, thing that you could possibly eat is the most ethically, correctly, perfectly prepared dish you could ever eat, and it matches your perfect flavor profile or whatever. It's like it's wonderful in that way.
Sure.
Like it'd be like impossible for it to not be.
It'd be impossible for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the experience of doing life would have to be accounted for, and doing life involves a certain amount of, like, you know, disappointment and exploration and stuff like that. And, you know, even just keeping it at food as the base example, like, I think in a utopian environment, you'd have to be free to, you know, try as many foods as you wanted to and explore the world and stuff.
Sure.
And in that case, you're not going to like every single food, you know?
Right. Because you would still have taste buds.
You still have taste buds.
Like limitations right. and everything.
Like, yes. Your body is still you. Like, you, just because you live in a utopian environment doesn't mean you could eat candy all day and it wouldn't be a problem.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Like, you're still a bag of meat, you know?
Right. Right. Yes. Yes. Like, inherently flawed in
right.
that particular capacity. So the question, though, at that point in time, to go back to your example with like the mice, is like, and again, you know, we're not mice. So the grain of salt, obviously.
Yeah.
Is there a point like where the need to create new generations ceases?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because that's what happens in the example. It's like the beautiful ones or whatever eventually reached a point where we're sort of like, we did it. Like, we are at the end. Like, you know, and that's like a, you know, its own weird philosophical question, but it's almost like if the objective is just reaching like complete and utter contentment, and it's sort of like we're done, that this was the mission, like we found it, and now like we don't, again, it's like we don't need a new generation to like help contribute to this ongoing quest, if that is in fact the quest, like, because we're there, you know, like, and
no, I don't think that happens.
No,
I don't think it's just like the point of humans is to get to a certain level of development and then just call it game, you know?
Right. Well, I guess that's like sort of where the mice example, it's like trying to use their conclusion and right. apply it. Cause like there is like, even in the world right now, or like in a more developed population, you can see population growth slow.
Yeah. Here's the more like modern takeaway. If you want to like the conclusion that's more fair.
Okay.
It's like Universe 25 wasn't an experiment proving that comfort destroys civilizations. It was an experiment showing that social animals can break down when deprived of meaningful roles, territory, and healthy social structures, even when their material needs are met.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yes. So, and then that I think becomes, that's like the question, right? Like, you know, so if you're taking this utopia example, it's sort of like, let's just say we keep designing better and better and better and better and better, like advanced robotics, you know, and it's sort of like we don't need to farm or prepare or drive or do any of those things. Like, I think that would also have to be included for this to be like a closer to representative example of like what our world could look like, because it would be like the meaningful roles would almost have to have like run their course.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what is the meaningful role that's left?
Right.
You know, and I think that would be what feels like closer to the expiration date, if you wanted to call it something dark and absurd.
Well, only because I think though, like, we can't imagine what the meaningful roles could be, because to us, these are the meaningful roles that exist right now.
Yeah. Well, that is also true. That is also true. It's like we only have the luxury of thinking about things as much as like feels like is attainable.
Right.
You know, like it's and again, maybe it's a bad example, but like the Jetsons, for example, would suggest that we would have flying cars by now. And it's like, I feel like self-driving cars has become like a bigger and bigger and bigger quest for us. And I'm sure that there is more than no one who is trying to come up with a safe version of a car that can like be in the air, that could be driven by people who aren't pilots. But it's certainly not the mainstream objective. So even though we can imagine a world where we have flying cars, it's not like we're putting all of our resources into flying cars. It's one step on the horizon too far to where that is like what we're, you know, it seems like people, if they talk about like the rest of our lives, for example, it's like chances are by the end of our life, we will have self-driving cars. Like that may be like an automated part of existence.
Right.
I don't think that by the end of our lifetime, we'll have flying cars.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And it's also just like, you know, we have so much infrastructure in place for driving cars.
Yes.
You know, it's like, what is there? Why? You know, are flying cars even the better choice? You know?
Yeah, I mean, fair question. Yeah. I mean, and that's the kind of thing too, where like you can look at the amount of space. Like if you were to go through and take a gander at cities, like maybe this is like another thing that like from the astronomical level looking in at the planet or whatever is concerned, like it's like, ooh, they still build towns near waterways.
Right.
You know, like because they did. They have not gotten past that requirement.
Right. The shipping still happens by the water.
It's still the most effective way to do that. And so, I mean, and this was like a brief thing that I feel like we touched on the edge of back during the pandemic, was like the work from home boom sort of happened. There was a grand experiment about this concept. It became much more common than it had ever been before, and probably nicely coincided with the, like, you know, internet becoming like so powerful and robust that you could realistically collaborate with others from further away. But then if you think about that, it's almost like, does it at all lessen the requirement for things like cities? Like, because the idea might be, and again, you're dragging it all the way to the most extreme, but like, the point of a city was like, let's put a whole bunch of decision makers in one place so that those people can go and take meetings with one another and continue to develop industry. You know, they can telephone the farm and say, hey, I had a meeting today with, you know, the grocery company. We need more tomatoes, you know, and then maybe out on the farm, they grow more tomatoes or whatever. But the people who are like making the decisions all need to be like in one space. That might dissipate a little bit.
I feel like the point is more the shipping stuff. Like the point of cities was like, everyone's near where the ships come in.
Well, and I think in the early days, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make more sense. Because then it's also like harder to distribute goods out into like more rural
areas. You know, like distribution is a problem.
Distribution is a problem, which is also further lessening, I would say, like by way of like planes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you could buy a bag of Doritos in Alaska.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you know, they're there. We're able to get them there. Whereas, like, you know, before, it might have to be like, well, I got to go into the city to pick up blankety blank because they don't sell it, you know, at the hardware store down the street.
Right.
So, yes, I think that there's like the accumulation of goods or whatever. But like cities now are not like you don't like we don't have to go to the city to get anything.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah, you can just get on your computer.
Exactly. Boom. Yes. And they'll deliver it to you. So what I was trying to say, though, is like with the pandemic, with work from home, with internet, with technology or whatever, it's like it could be the case that people who previously needed to live in a city because of their job don't need to anymore. Like now they can sort of like almost like trickle back out into other parts of the world and still do theoretically the same job. So if you go back to flying cars and infrastructure and roads and all this stuff that we did, it's almost like if we don't have a need for all of that like disruption of the landmass because the cars can go in the air, then like maybe that there's like an environmental boom to not having such massive interstates and highways and cutting through mountain ranges and stuff like that. Like,
sure.
You could lift off and then it's sort of like, okay, now you could go live in a field in the middle of nowhere because if you needed to get stuff from, you know, again, the city, you could lift off and be way further away, way faster.
Everything is just as the crow flies.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
Which shortens the distance dramatically, which then requires less communal living.
Right.
You know, you could be further apart.
Right. You could be further apart.
Right.
But people crave connection.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the gathering points, I think, are still, you know, massive. And then that's where you get to like the Ready Player One example, where it's sort of like, is there a world where a digital frontier becomes the way that you get that connection?
Right. Like, yeah, everyone lives far apart, but then you doesn't matter because in the game, in the digital world, you're close together.
You're close together.
Right. Yeah, like I think it does matter because that's not the same.
That's true. That's true. But like even case in point, like what we do here on the internet, like this is a community. Like part of what makes this so special and magical is like it's people coming together who like the same thing.
Yeah, but we all come into the office.
We do all come into the office.
Yeah.
We do all come into the office. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, I think better work is done directly face to face.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
So anyway, I mean, just interesting thought experiments about like how the future, I think, can unfold. Like I tend to like have like a myriad of different like things that I feel like my mind goes to when I kind of imagine these levels of the future. Like I always like the Ready Player One, the Matrix and the Giver are always like the three that I feel like end up like encompassing like models that are just highly fleshed out for these types of things.
Yeah. I don't think any of those are likely.
I think probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, but they are all versions of what are, I think, attempting to explain, like in Ready Player One, for example, they literally call it the Oasis.
Yeah.
Like the idea is like, go somewhere special.
Right.
You know, and like in that way, you know, like you might be like living in the stacks.
Yeah.
But like when you're in there, it's like, that's where you are.
Yeah. I think to me though, the point of all those books is how not to do things.
Cautionary tales.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, they've certainly been, again, extrapolated to the furthest ends. But like that's where, you know, what the Giver gives you is like a society like where they take pills actively to like remove color from daily existence.
Right.
And like, you know, hunger and like everybody just kind of goes and like they're not really like automatons, but like enjoyment is not something that anybody really has.
Right.
But neither is boredom or resentment or anything else.
Right. They're all false utopias. They're utopias born of like rules and regulations, not of free will, which is not a utopia at all.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that like, then if you take the Matrix example, that's exactly what Morpheus and Neo are fighting for. Like, they, you know, when you exit the Matrix, you leave the world that we imagine and know behind.
Right. You leave the comfort of the Matrix.
You leave the comfort of the Matrix. And then you're going and you're living in like a ship in like shadowy darkness where there's like giant drone like alien things that want to attack and destroy right. you and all that. And like the explanation there is sort of like, this is still better.
Right.
Like,
that's why that like rave scene ends up being like, it's such a random, like when you see it, you're like, what is happening here?
In the second Matrix.
Right. The second Matrix, like the rave scene is so important because it's like, these people are living like underground in the center of the earth. They're losing a war, you know, against the machines. But at the end of the day, this experience they're having is like a true real life human experience. There is music, there is dancing. It is like carnal almost.
Yeah.
You know, it is like, it is such a real raw human experience that like defies the machines.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. 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 Like, it's like they basically were sort of like, you know, like we're not living with everything that the Matrix provides, but we are still living.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where you talk about like that human connection, like being with people directly, why that's so vital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Although now that, speaking of the Matrix, I feel like as I was going through the Universe 25 stuff, I was like, this is a very Agent Smith view of the world, where he's like, the first Matrix was a disaster. We gave you utopia. Everything was accounted for and you destroyed each other or whatever. It was like, that's what happened.
Right. Yes, yes, yeah. And it would not surprise me at all if whoever wrote the Matrix is not familiar with the study that you just described.
Seems likely, but who knows. I was like, but of course that's just such like, of course the machines have, you know, the most cynical view of humans.
They obviously do. Yeah. But then you also have like, you know, in the Matrix, like the, he's not really like the main villain. He's just kind of like an antagonist. He is somebody who has been unplugged and is basically making a deal with the agents because he's like, honestly, I'm living on this crappy ship. It's not very fun. It's cold all the time. The food sucks. Like, if you can plug me back in and I don't know, like, I'm eating this steak. I know this steak isn't real. But you know what? Doesn't make me enjoy it any less.
Ignorance is bliss.
You know, and it's like, obviously he's like an antagonist because he's like, the idea is that he's wrong.
Right. Yes. You know? Right.
Like, you know, and he's, yeah. he feels very.
He's the outlier.
He's the outlier. He feels very like gluttonous.
Right.
You know, in terms of like the way that he wants to view the world. And they even offer like, you know, if you give us information on Morpheus or whatever, like we'll bring you back as whatever you want. And it's like, I want to be famous, you know,
yeah.
like
rich,
rich. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, they plug you back in. You're going to go in the exact spot you were and you'll have no idea.
You'll have no idea.
You'll have no idea.
Right. You think you're negotiating. You're not.
You're not.
Yeah. They hold all the power.
They have the power. It costs them nothing to give you what you're asking for. Even if they do it, like, so what? It means nothing to them. You're just a battery, you know?
Yes.
It's just imagination in your brain.
Cipher. These are pixels.
Yeah. These are pixels.
Yeah. No, it really is. I mean, it's one of the, like the, I think it's the most interesting like thing to discuss. Like I love stuff like this because it's like, it's really hard to know. It's really hard to like unpack motivations. It's probably like there are certain motivations that we have every single day in life that we have no idea what the actual driving force behind is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's sort of like, why are certain things important to us? What is the quest that we were on?
Right.
Actually, one of these came up with me the other day because like doing my yard is like something that like is just like a good pastime for me. It's exactly like we were talking about before. It's a Goldilocks activity for me. Like I can go out, there's a finished product at the end of it and it looks nice. And, you know, I can step back and be like, ah, I did a thing, you know, but like part of the game to me is almost like, it's like attempting to maintain the property while I'm doing everything else, mm-hmm. while still also working a job and raising a child and doing all those other things. Like, because I'll think about retirement and it'd be like, dude, I could go out, I could spend all day doing nothing but like pulling weeds and spreading fertilizer and like, you know, doing like whatever to make it look like as perfect as humanly possible. Like
right.
just the game of, can I do it?
Yeah.
But
that's the Grandpa Len of it all.
Yeah, exactly. But
his
then,
yard looked great.
Very,
it still
very,
does.
Yeah. Very spot on. But the like the part of it then is almost like, yeah, but then it's like, if all I have to do is like, well, of course it would look good if it's all I had to do, you know? And it's like, And it's not very fun.
Nah, but you'd go bigger. You know, you'd be like, but what else can I plant?
What else
how can I do? I make it can look good now that it's good? How can it be better?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's a fair point too. You know, maybe it's just a perspective that I have not yet unlocked in life.
Yeah.
And, or it could even be the case where it's like, why did I care about this my whole life? Like, it's like that. To what end?
Right.
You know, like, what am I using it for?
It's
like, it looks nice to the people who walk by my house.
Right.
You know, like,
does it really matter if I mow the lawn?
Am I providing a service to them so right. that they walk by and they're like, oh.
It feels like I'm providing a service to the city. All right. You know?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's like you pull up at my house. People
are expecting a check here.
Looks okay. Really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you pay me to mow my lawn. All right.
That's right.
You don't fine me for not doing it. You pay me for doing it.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Anyway, if you have any feedback for the show, you can send on over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Otherwise, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.